My name is Jim Evans, 20549. I represent the Colorado Horse Park Incorporated. Colorado Horse Park is a nonprofit public charity organized primarily to foster amateur sports competitions located in southern Douglas County, just south of Parker, Colorado. It approximately covers 157 acres of land, of which is the subject of the appeal today. The land itself was applied for. The exemption that was originally applied for was back in 2005. A hearing was held in 2008 on the matter. The Colorado State Board of Assessment Appeals, after a full day of hearing, asked that we provide briefs on the question of whether the classification also would be covered under the amateur sports classification of the exemption. As a result of that, we amended the application shortly after that, and the property tax administrator reviewed that particular application, denied that application along with our first application on charitable, on whether we were covered by the charitable exemption, and therefore the case is before you today. There are two issues that we're covering today. The first issue is whether the Colorado Horse Park is a charitable organization covered by the statute 39.3108(1). And the second issue is whether the Colorado Horse Park is an amateur sports organization covered by the other section of the statute, which is 39.3108(1.3). The first issue, whether we are a charitable organization covered by the first part of the statute, I would simply say we'll stand on our briefs and simply ask you to note that the opinion did not cover the testimonies of Greg Welcher, a member of the governor's cabinet, did not cover the testimony of Jack Hilbert, the county commissioner, who testified as to how the Colorado Horse Park lessens the burden on government in this particular area. I think the other issue that I would turn to today and address to you today is the issue of the statutory interpretation that the board applied to the exemption as it applies to whether or not the Colorado Horse Park is a qualified amateur sports organization. Now, that particular issue, luckily, was narrowed by my brilliant counsel, Robert Dodd, who basically said that, and we agreed with him in his answer brief, that organized and operated are two elements that we had to look at in terms of how we classified amateur sports organization. The state has conceded the issue of whether or not we're organized as a sports organization. What they are arguing with us on is whether or not we are operated exclusively as a sports organization. And therein is where we are joined before you today. What we have here is an issue of statutory interpretation of how you define operated exclusively. You have to look at the statute in order to have those definitions. And what we contend today is that the board, when they looked at that particular statute, and this is one of first impression, because believe it or not, there's not very many organizations like this, and I understand how the board could come to that conclusion and not have really good definitions in front of it. And for that, I apologize.
Counsel, if I could just add, yes. Follow up on your comment. Is there anything in the record indicating how many organizations in Colorado have that exemption?
We did discuss that at one point toward the end of the hearing. There is one. It's the U.S. Olympic Committee in Colorado Springs.
That's the only other one.
That's the only other one we know of, yeah. And the statute was created in 1990 by Senator Powers and by Representative Anderson. They were moving pretty quickly and didn't have time to really put some definitions into that section. But the important thing here is that how do you step back and define what evidence you're going to look for when you look at those definitions? And what we feel that the statute provides some guidance, but what you look at is four basic elements. First of all, does it foster local, state, national organization, national competitions? And the term foster is very, very, very important. The second thing that you look at is it primarily, is the Colorado Horse Park primarily being operated to support and develop amateur athletes? Okay, that's very important. The second is through the net earnings, not profits, but net earnings of such organizations inure to the benefit of any private shareholder. And the fourth is, does it demonstrate that membership is open to any individuals? I think on the fourth element, I don't think the Mr. Dodd and the state are contesting us on the fourth element. I think really the battleground here is on the first three elements. On the first three elements, the first element that we would look at is the term foster. I believe the Colorado Horse Park does foster amateur training and development. But foster doesn't require the training, doesn't require that we do the actual training. If you look at the common definition of foster, it only means to encourage or promote. What the board seems to be stuck on is that we have to actually do the training. And that's really not, that we feel, the definition that needed to be applied. And so the evidence they're looking at is that they're looking at, where is the training? Where are the, you know, the individuals? How are you hiring them? How are they paid?
Well, counsel, I think that probably is relevant. I understand your point that it doesn't necessarily to disqualify the exemption because there are for-profit trainers and a for-profit riding school. Mm-hmm. But where is the evidence? Is there any evidence of an agreement that governs the trainers and requires them to adhere to the requirements of the exemption? Are there any regulations issued by the horse park that require trainers to adhere to those regulations, to the requirements of the exemption?
The trainers are not employed by us. They're independent contractors.
What is there that requires the trainers to exclusively train for national and international competition, or primarily for national and international competition?
That's not the, respectfully, Your Honor, that's really not the direction that the statute goes in. What the statute is asking us is, do we foster or encourage the athletes, not the trainers? The emphasis is on the athletes.
Well, that's what I'm asking, counsel. Uh-huh. What is it that causes the trainers to do that fostering that you're talking about?
Well, it's the contract between the athlete and the trainer. The athletes independently hire the trainers.
So there's nothing in that horse park, no kind of control the horse park exercises to assure that the trainers are doing the fostering that you're talking about.
The use of the facility is the fostering and the encouraging. It's the use of the land. That's the question.
I understand that, but the trainers could be simply training horses and their riders.
Okay.
May I finish?
May I finish?
Okay,
I'm sorry.
Thank you. What is there that requires the trainers to be training the horses and their clients for international and national competition?
Thank you very much, Your Honor. There is a set of rules. The International EFI, International Equestrian Federation, and the U.S. Equestrian Federation have a set of rules and regulations that are set down that the trainers are required to adhere to, that we are required to make sure that the trainers adhere to in terms of how the athletes are developed and how the athletes' horses are developed. Those are specific requirements that we impose on the trainers. Those are standards that we impose.
How do you impose, how does Horse Park impose those?
We simply establish the rule that they cannot participate there unless they adhere to those rules and regulations.
And is that rule in the
contract that we ask them to sign?
There is a contract which they sign?
That's correct.
And is that contract in the record?
I don't remember it being in the record, Your Honor. But there is an agreement that they sign between us to use the facility, and they have to adhere to the international rules and regulations. There's testimony in the record by Mrs. Kriebel of that contract. There's testimony in the record by the president of the International Equestrian Federation, David O'Connor, of that fact, that they have to adhere to those rules and regulations. The trainers are for the year-round facility. The facility itself can house up to 1,000 horses and contestants during from the May 1st to October the 1st. Individuals come in with other additional trainers. So there's not just a core of five trainers. The five trainers that are there are year-round trainers. The 390 facility, facilities for the horses are very uniquely constructed to meet international rules and regulations. There are 18 veterinarians that are on site during the course of the competitions. The competitions themselves generate over $50 million to the economy of Douglas County. This is a large facility. There's only one other facility in the entire United States like it, and that's the Kentucky Horse Park in Lexington, Kentucky. So we have this international thing. The international events are sanctioned by us. We cannot hold these events unless they're sanctioned by the international associations.
Horse Park do anything to foster professional competition?
There is no professional competition at the Horse Park.
Not at the Horse Park, but do they or their agents do anything that would foster professional competition?
No, they don't, Josh.
What about the Grand Prix, which has $60,000 in prize money, $20,000 to the winner?
The prize money, Your Honor, doesn't come close to making up for the costs of participating in the events themselves. And the prize money itself is at the highest level, the Olympic level. And all Grand Prix, all Olympic Grand Prix offer prize money of some sort to offset the cost for the top riders.
That's considered amateur sports?
Yes, it is.
And $20,000 prize?
Well, yes, it is. And if you look at the definition of how the International Equestrian Association defines amateur, you will see that the only time you become a professional is if you teach or if you test or if you sell horses. That's the only time you become a professional. Any other time, as David O'Connor pointed out in his testimony, everything else is amateur. Helen Krebel, the president of the Horse Park, pointed out that every event there is amateur. There are no professional events that are held at the Colorado Horse Park.
Council, when the legislature adopted the statute that provides for amateur, is there any legislative history that indicates they were considering the particular rules, the FEI rules you're talking about in terms of what constitutes an amateur? Or were they thinking, or is there any definition of what they had in mind for amateur?
I think they probably had in mind the Olympic model, which includes hiring coaches and trainers. The Olympic model, basically, they hire independent coaches and trainers all the time to work in their facilities. They're not employed by the Olympic Committee. I mean, that's the kind of thing they basically do. So I think they have probably had that in mind and they knew it. What they're concerned about is the facility. The use of the facility is what is really the issue. And the facility is used for free. There is no charge to the athletes for the use of this facility. There is none.
Apart from the boarding fees.
The boarding fees are about $790,000. $1,900,000 comes in from the competition. The athletes themselves, when they come and they board the horses and they participate in the activities themselves, bring in the largest amount of activities. $790,000 is what we bring in on a year-round boarding operation for our facility. But that boarding operation has to fit international federation rules. This is a stall that's large. This is a stall that has warm showers. This is a stall that has bed offices. And this is a unique facility. This is not your normal barn, turnout barn for a normal horse. These horses are $1 million horses, each one of them, and are highly prized and everything else. And they're trained very much with the athlete. But the focus of the statute is on the athlete. The horse is a partner with the athlete in the competitions, and we require the horses to be there. Why do we require the horses to be there? Because the international rules and regulations are very, very particular. Each athlete brings 5 to 10 horses to the competition. Why do they do that? Because the demands of the competition are so hard on the animals. And so what we do with the athletes when they're training and they train for these competitions, they train with 5 or 10 horses each. But the other thing that we do is we provide the facility free of charge. We also note that what we're doing is we're encouraging and assisting the use of the land, which assists the athletes working toward their goals, which is moving up the stairs to ultimate international and Olympic competition. We have North American championships, which are youth championships. I've been there twice. So we have young people coming in and using the facility, as young as the age of 8, all the way up to the Olympic gold medal champions.
Also, I have two questions. First, where did you come up with your 4-part test? What case or statute or regulation did you use for that? And secondly is, tell us about the net earnings inuring to the private parties part of that test. Where did you get the test?
The first, if you take a look at the statute 1.3, it indicates four elements that have to be met if you're going to organize and operate it.
So that's where you get the test from, exactly. The statute itself?
Exactly within the statute itself.
Okay. The second thing is then, how about the net earnings in your private parties? What about that? How would that apply in this case?
There are no net earnings that inure to any private parties. The Cuddle Horse Park is a 501c3 private public charity, and if you look at the financials that we put into the record, it has never shown a profit. And if it has shown a profit, it's about maybe $100,000 one year, but it has never shown a profit in its operation in its entire history. Since it took over and operated the Cuddle Horse Park on May 17th, 2004.
Council, I have one quick question. As I understand your argument, you have explained where the four-part test comes from. I think we have, as I understand it, a little dispute about that test or even any dispute about the factors that govern the inquiry here. You have ably explained the evidence that would support a factual finding in favor of your client. I appreciate your argument there. I'm just wondering, have I overlooked anything? Can you identify any dispute about the governing legal standards? Or am I correct that you basically agree about the test that's going to govern this inquiry?
I think we both agree that the Cuddle Horse Park is organized for amateur sports. I think the issue here for us is a statutory interpretation of what evidence you look at when you look at how whether it is operated for the purposes of being in amateur sports.
Well, now let me clarify that point. In your view, excuse me, apologize. In your view, how did the board err in the quantum or the quality of evidence that it considered in making this finding? I understand you're challenging the ultimate conclusion, but what did the court do wrong in contemplating the body of evidence?
If you were to look at the brief that the state provided, there are several factual issues that as a result of misinterpreting the state statute that they simply got wrong. First of all, they say that the for-profit trainers' fees, the trainers turn directly to control the occupancy of the petitioner's barns and the use of subject properties. They don't control the barns or the use of the properties whatsoever.
Well, counsel, it's impossible for someone to have a horse admitted unless they sign up with one of the trainers that you have, right?
No, it's not. They have to be associated with the trainer, and the reason is the facilities.
So the trainer controls what horses are going to be boarded at your facility.
No, the boarding is open to anyone that wishes to board at that facility, provided, of course, that they have the demonstrated experience. And if they are associated with a trainer, that gives us the assurance that we know that they're going to be able to use the facility safely and not get into trouble.
Okay, I had understood from some of the testimony and from the findings of the board that unless in order to be boarded, you had to hook up with one of the trainers at the facility. That's not true. They could bring their own trainer.
For the year-round boarding, we have 390.
That's what I'm talking about.
For year-round boarding, which is only about a fourth of the total budget, they have to be associated with the training and the development of their skills as athletes.
They do. The people who compete, they don't have to.
No, but they don't have to. Yes, sir.
So is it your view then that the board overemphasized the importance of basically for-profit trainers and the boarding of the horses associated with those for-profit trainers?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to present our case.
It was either 2 or 3 minutes to be at 3. Okay. So we'll add 3 minutes to your time, Mr. Dodd.
May I please the court and esteemed counsel, on behalf of the Division of Property Tax, I'm Robert Dodd, registration number 27869 with the Colorado Attorney General's Office. This is an exemption case, of course, and the critical point here is that as an exemption case, the burden is on the applicant to put forward the evidence and to prove and establish the right to the exemption. And here, the Board of Assessment Appeals, which was actually the second administrative body or agency to consider the claim of exemption, upheld the property tax administrator's denial of the claim and found that based on the evidence, they had not carried that burden.
Counsel, let me just ask you, he contends that the state does not contest the whether or not the horse park was organized for purposes of the amateur sports portion of the exemption. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor. For purposes of this appeal, we think the evidence might have supported a different determination, but we don't contest that finding by the BAA.
Thank you.
And as counsel states, there are two issues here. One, the charitable, the general charitable exemption, and then as a subset of that, really, subsection 1.3 of that same statute, the amateur sports organization statute. It's an interesting
Subset meaning if they can't qualify for charitable, they necessarily can't qualify for amateur sports?
Thank you, Your Honor. I should clarify. We don't contend that they have to satisfy both. It is either or. I guess what I'm indicating is that what you get with the amateur sports organization classification is a bit of a pass on the necessity to establish a separate gift. So in other words, if you meet that definition of qualified amateur sports organization, you're presumed to satisfy, and I think the language of the statute is that it's presumed to be owned and used solely and exclusively for strictly charitable purposes. So this is, I guess my point is that as a statutory matter, the section on amateur sports organization is a very specific type of showing that the applicant must make. And I think also combine that with this, that this is an exemption case, that the court should, and the BAA correctly held the horse park to a clear showing of those elements, which they failed to make.
Do you agree with counsel that there's essentially a four-part test to determine whether or not it's operated? Operated exclusively, though exclusively does not mean exclusively in this context.
Your Honor, I believe, if I understand counsel's statement of that test, so to speak, I believe that's fair and reasonable interpretation of the statute, although it's not really set out perhaps as a four-part test, but I do agree, and I think he indicated the elements are that it must foster the competition, and number two, primarily support and develop athletes.
And what's missing? If you agreed with that, then what was missing with respect to the showing of horse park? It may have had some for-profit activities, and yet was it primarily for the purpose of supporting amateur athletes?
We contend that the BAA got it right when it concluded that although the horse park was organized exclusively to foster competition and organized primarily to support and develop amateur athletes, that it was not operated in either case.
Tell me how it didn't primarily. In other words, tell me how it was primarily for profit as opposed to primarily to support amateur athletics.
Yes, Your Honor. The Coastal BAA heard myriad of facts concerning this, and I won't be able to restate them all, but the critical ones I think are well known and I think agreed to here is that the horse park itself does not undertake any training of athletes.
Is training a prerequisite or is fostering the prerequisite?
Well, I think that the factual matter is that they don't do any training of athletes. Now, the legal question is, do they foster the development of amateur athletes? And so the BAA interpreted the facts here and made a conclusion, in other words, heard the facts, that they don't train the athletes. And in addition, I would say that there's an absence of any other facts to show, well, even if they weren't directly training, would they be doing something else to foster that? And what I contend is that the horse park didn't put forth facts in addition that might have countered that. There's simply an absence in the record.
How about the fact that there's a lot of amateur activities allowed upon the property? Is not that a type of fostering? It is allowed to be used for amateur athletes to develop their skills. Is that not a fostering? And the question also is, again, so is first of all, is it your contention that they're lacking on the fostering, not the primarily supporting the athletic athletes? Because I'm not sure you've ever answered my question, Council, as to in what way was the horse park primarily for profit as opposed to primarily supporting amateur endeavors?
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll try to answer the question, and I think there's two separate prongs to that, as
right.
You've noted.
Right. How about the first one? Let's go with the primarily supporting. That was my original question.
Okay.
And then let's go to the fostering.
And the question is, what was the evidence on the question of whether or not the horse park primarily supports and develops amateur athletes?
Right. What was the evidence indicating it does not operate primarily to support amateur endeavors?
Well, I think it's a totality of the circumstances test, and I think the case law in the area of exemptions has indicated in several different cases that each case has to be judged on its own facts here. So the BAA heard the entirety of the evidence, and of course that has to include the questions of what types of events are occurring. Part of that is that you have your $60,000 Grand Prix. Part of that is that the fees from competition that they are generating are about just under $2 million in most cases. That's a major portion of their income. And so, yes, they are holding competitions, but the BAA concluded, I believe, correctly that merely holding competitions and accepting the income from that doesn't necessarily directly support and develop amateur athletes. The question of whether or not amateur athletes are being supported and developed, of course, and this is ultimately, I think, a factual conclusion, but they found required something more than just establishing a facility and letting private for-profit trainers develop the athletes.
Council, the problem I have in trying to struggle with is this training issue. Is the evidence sufficient to support the contention of the horse park that these trainers are primarily engaged in supporting and developing amateur athletes for international and national competition? And it didn't look to me like there were any contracts or regulations, although counsel says there may have been. Ms. Kriebel may have had some testimony, but I thought it was not very specific or concrete. I don't think there was any evidence of statistics of how many people who sign up or are clients of the trainers are actually involved in competition as opposed to simply being, which is perfectly fine, but simply being interested in horses and wanting to ride for recreational purposes. What record is there on that that you think defeats there or where they fail to carry their burden on that issue?
You know, I think the BAA correctly, and Your Honor has also, I think, noticed that the BAA specifically found a lack of evidence that the trainers are encouraged to support and develop the amateur athletes. And I'm referring to, I believe it's in page 7 of the order, where the BAA considers the testimony of Ms. Helen Kriebel that the trainers are encouraged to do so, but that they found, I think they used unpersuaded, they were not persuaded that there was any requirement to do so. And so I can't point to anything like this more than a lack of evidence in the record. And regarding the contracts that may exist, I don't believe those are part of the record. I'm not aware of any contracts in the record between trainers and the horse park that would require them to do so. And so I think the board was troubled there by the lack of a connection, a lack of requirement that the trainers actually undertake the purposes for which the horse park was formed.
And so, and am I correct in appreciating that the significance or non-significance of evidence on this point all concerns the 5 year-round trainers, the income from which comprises about 25% of the overall budget of this operation?
I believe that's correct, Your Honor.
So it's otherwise the other income from the competitions and the big events that happened there. Does the evidence mandate the conclusion that that income, that effort, is all in the effort of fostering amateur competition?
Your Honor, I don't believe the evidence mandates the conclusion that all the other income, say from the competitions, that I think it's $1.8 million a year out of about, I think, a $3 million budget that comes from the competitions. I don't think the evidence would mandate the conclusion that the majority of that income from the competitions is necessarily reflective of their efforts to support and develop amateur athletes. There's a lot of discussion. I know there's a question about what is an amateur or professional athlete, and the reference was to, I believe, the a rule that indicated a professional is someone who sells horses or teaches. But there's no connection here, certainly not shown, I don't believe, on this record, that definition should apply to the statute. In other words, I don't believe any record or history of the statute that would suggest that was the intended meaning by use of the statute. Clearly, these competitions, they cost a lot of money to put on. That's certainly true, but they also generate substantial purses at times. So perhaps some of that money that's generated from competitions would be to properly attributed to support and develop amateur athletes. But there's no, I don't think, evidence in the record that can be from which it can be concluded that it all is. And the BAA's conclusion, I believe, was that on the whole, and based on the facts, including the competitions and the training, the organization does not operate primarily to support and develop amateur athletes. And we believe that.
What does it operate primarily to do?
Well, initially, when they came to apply for the application, they intended to build, and they built their application on the plans to build a museum and a teaching center about the history and heritage of the horse in the American West. And so that was what the initial hearing was about, and a lot of that evidence came forth in that hearing. But in fact, those plans never, for the most part, materialized. And it was in the middle of that hearing that evidence began to be put forward about amateur sports organization, and subsequently the application was amended. So we think there's also a great deal of confusion in the record about what exactly the purposes and plans of the organization were, given
that. Well, forget the purposes and plans. We're not operating, right?
That's correct, sir.
All right. So therefore, let me ask you, what was it primarily operating as?
Well, I think it's fair to say it's a competition center. They built the horse park and created the facilities, and clearly they hold competitions there.
Not primarily as a amateur competition center?
That was not proved to the sufficiency of the board, and we would not agree that the evidence in the record mandates that conclusion. We think there's substantial evidence to support the BAA conclusion that the center is not operated exclusively to foster local, statewide, international sports competitions.
I know what the term exclusively doesn't really mean exclusively here. So back again, was it operating primarily as a amateur competition center? If it was that, does that foster? Is that not primarily support amateur athletics?
Thank you, Your Honor. I think we do have to look closely at that language, because the first problem is it operated exclusively to foster local, statewide, national, international amateur sports competition. I think the board was not convinced that it was all amateur.
Yeah, but remember, I think in your briefs, you both seem to say you use the term exclusively and solely and exclusively, but then you go down to say, but you can have some incidental, non-amateur purposes. So really, amateur or exclusively doesn't really mean exclusively. It means something else.
That's correct, Your Honor. I think both agree that there's some level of incidental, non-qualifying use that is permissible under the law. Now, where that line gets drawn exactly is a matter of both factual conclusion and legal interpretation.
How about attitudinally? Where does that line get drawn attitudinally? Where would we have some kind of principle to try to apply where that line would get drawn?
Yeah, I think it's difficult to
draw many very clear lines, especially in the area of exemptions, because the cases have said so many times that each case must be determined on its own facts. And clearly, because of this unique language in the statute, it gets even tougher to draw really clear lines. But I believe the Cherry Creek Gun Club case did at least discuss the question of what does exclusively mean, and I think the court concluded there that some incidental non-qualifying use is acceptable, but that it certainly has to be strongly and maybe, you know, you're going to have to use other words, and it's really difficult to say other than to use the word exclusively and understand that it may not be absolutely 100% exclusively, but it certainly has to be
fairly small incidental
non-qualifying use.
So I'm up to here. I just want to clarify that I understand your argument. We have general agreement about the statute that applies, and I hear no fundamental disagreement about the factors that govern this inquiry. How can we be certain that the BAA applied those factors in the manner that's now contemplated here? Can you assure us that that actually happened?
Well, I think the best indication that, thank you, is the order itself. If I'm not getting the question, please tell me. But I think the contention is that the BAA didn't consider all the evidentiary factors and testimony properly. I think the best assurance that it did is the order itself, which I believe is, given the nature of the board as a lay body, shows a remarkable degree of careful consideration of the evidence at issue, and specific, in a couple of cases, specific weighing and acceptance or rejection of certain testimony, for instance, offered by the horse park. So while certainly the order doesn't indicate a global consideration of every piece of evidence, or perhaps even every factor that could be brought into the discussion expressly, we believe that overall the BAA made a reasoned and thoughtful consideration of all the relevant facts and a reasonable interpretation of the law that should be upheld.
Well, as it comes to us now in this appeal, the issue, because we have to determine not really whether it was right, but whether the findings were clearly erroneous in light of the body of evidence submitted, your position would be that while the evidence might indeed even support an inference in favor of your colleague here, it would clearly support an inference in favor of the BAA's decision.
Thank you, Your Honor. I might not be so generous as to say that it would clearly support an inference in favor of the horse park. We believe the evidence actually was pretty strong in favor of denying the exemption, given the activities that took place versus by the horse park, operated by the horse park, versus what was actually handled by for-profit third parties. And we think that is a significant distinction.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate the arguments from both sides. The case is submitted, and we will render a decision in due course.